In the Disney franchise, the dream of a dashing prince who would ride in and sweep a young maiden off her feet often became a reality. Heroines from Cinderella to Snow White to Ariel the Little Mermaid all felt their hearts flutter when their handsome suitor made his on-screen entrance. But Disney's most recent animated princess films have tweaked the love-at-first-sight formula, and the ubiquitous hit Frozen offers more than just an earwig of a song. It offers a more complex idea of love and female agency. SUNY Plattsburgh history professor Connie Shimo finds this fascinating, and she's joining us now to explain more. Dr. Shimo, welcome to Vermont Edition.
Thank you for having me.
So Disney princesses get, as we were saying here, the academic treatment. What makes this interesting to you and worth academic study rather than just, you know, a couple of hours of fun with your kids?
Well, I think Disney princesses are one of the ways that people are now exploring what it means to be a girl. I think it's one of the most profound conversations where people are having. As you've seen, the Disney princesses have evolved a great deal. Since you mentioned The Little Mermaid, that's 1989. You see 2 years later, Beauty and the Beast, 1991, a very, very different kind of princess from Belle onward. But yet at the same time, one of my points about this is that at the same time we're seeing this evolving princesses, these new princesses, there's an unwillingness on the part of Disney to let go of the old princesses. There's a continued embrace of the old princesses. And this is a debate about what it means to be a woman, what it means to be a girl, what we're showing our children. I don't think there's almost anything to me as a parent or as an academic that's more important than the messages we're giving our children about the kind of people that they're going to grow up to be. Not just our girls. I think that gender is important to girls and boys.
So if we're seeing, you know, those early Cinderella, Snow White, Sleeping Beauty, those older films, I was sort of describing that, you know, the guy rides in and sweeps the woman off her feet. Is that the way you see it, that there was this sort of love is for, at first sight ideal?
Exactly. That's exactly the issue. That's probably the people. There's a lot of problems that people looking back see with them. The passivity, the lack of activity, the lack of ability to help themselves. You know, Snow White's even not even being able to keep the door closed, you know, in spite of the fact that there was somebody who was, you know, trying to kill her and clearly unambiguously trying to kill her. But one of the most, I think, important critiques of those is the idea that you meet somebody and you fall in love. There's no, it's, and when you think about that, when you think about meeting somebody and falling in love at the first time, there's no room to develop if they're kind, if they're brave, any personal qualities. It's all about looks, and in the case of the prince, usually about wealth, because he's a prince, you know, he's wealthy.
Well, right, of course.
Yeah. So with Cinderella, we see that she's kind beforehand. We see her helping the mice. We see her making clothes for mice, things like that. The prince has, you know, doesn't see any of this. He loves her because she's the most beautiful girl there. He doesn't, and this is, I'm talking about the 1950 animated film. He doesn't like the stepsisters because they're ugly, they're unattractive, not because they're mean. He doesn't see how she treat Cinderella. So there's no room, and that's bad for everybody. It's, again, the princess movies, because they're so directed at girls and because our toys right now are so gendered. I think you might, as a historian, you maybe put that from the 90s onward, even from the 80s, this extreme gendering. And even I think it's gotten more into the 2000s, this extreme gendering of toys. You see princesses are generally directed toward girls. But a model where you have to be dashing and handsome and rich to get the girl, it's not good for boys either. It's not a good model of human relationships.
So then you say, though, at least for Disney, maybe Disney was seeing some of this writing on the wall and sort of tweaked that formula.
Very much so.
Ariel is sort of the last one of the love at first sight?
Ariel's the last one of the love at first sight. You see, again, the three, Snow White, 1937, Cinderella, 1950, and then Sleeping Beauty, 1959, all very much love at first sight. Then Ariel, you can see it's such a 1989 is such an interesting period. It's an interesting period because for the first half of the movie, she seems like a very different princess. She's active. She's curious. She takes her fate in her own hands. She disobeys, you know, her father. She doesn't accept, you know, another big critique is they accepted injustice without, and you clearly, especially, you know, Cinderella, you know, accepted all these, you know, really unfair treatment without even a murmur. And is that really the model you want? No, but Ariel wasn't like that. Mm-hmm. She's determined, right? Then she meets this, she sees Eric, falls in love, and she makes one more decision to become a human. But when she gets on land, again, she becomes completely passive. She almost, when you look at the last scene, she takes almost no part in the last scene.
Mm-hmm.
And she does fall in love at first sight. And then she gives up everything. She gives up her life in the sea and goes with him. The Little Mermaid is a really important movie in the history of Disney movies. It's the first, it's called the beginning of the Disney Renaissance. So the coming back of fairy tales. It was popular beyond anyone's expectations. And it brought the idea of the Disney princess back. But it was also critiqued for the reasons I just discussed. And in the 1991 Beauty and the Beast, you see a very conscious push to make a new kind of princess. Through the character of Gaston, the idea of loving somebody just because they're beautiful is mocked.
Mm-hmm.
There's a great song where he sings and he says, "Here in town there's only me, she who's as beautiful as me, so I'm making plans to woo and marry Belle." So Disney, as early as 1991, you see those kind of critiques, but Frozen takes it to a whole other level.
Well, let's talk about that. So if you're a parent of a young child, particularly of young girls, you mm-hmm. probably don't need any recap on the plot of Frozen. But for the rest of us who have not spent the last year with Frozen, you know, ringing every line of dialogue in our heads, what do we need to know about the plot and why that's interesting to you about this idea of love?
Anna is isolated. Elsa, her older sister, has power. She can freeze things and turn things into snow and ice. So to protect Anna from Elsa, and also to protect Elsa from herself to some degree, the parents close the gates of the castle. So Anna grows up very isolated. And then she has a chance. And her parents die, of course, as in all Disney movies.
And from Bambi onward.
From Bambi onward. So her parents die. So she's even more isolated. And then she has one chance. The castle gates open, and it's coronation day. And so she has one chance to meet somebody. And she meets Hans. And he seems like the complete Prince Charming. They sing a song. They fall in love, just like Cinderella and just like Sleeping Beauty.
Okay.
And then in the end, he turns out to be a horrible villain. He literally he places her trust in her. So then she goes off and meets Kristoff. And she gets struck by her sister. Accidentally. And so she's hurt and she's freezing. She has a frozen heart, so she's freezing to death. And the trolls tell her she needs an act of true love. So this act, and she assumes right away that this act of true love will be true love's first kiss, right? Clear Sleeping Beauty reference, 1959, back to that. So Kristoff seems to assume this too, and he takes her there. And you think that the audience thinks he's about to kiss her. And he says, "Anna, if there was only someone who loved you," and tells her that she's needy, that he never loved her, he was only using her. He puts off all sources of heat in the room and leaves her to freeze to death. You know, like all classic villains, he actually doesn't kill her so she can survive. But so she leaves. He leaves her. He literally leaves her to die. Prince Charming becomes a sociopathic murderer. It's a very brutal lesson. For children, but at the same time that Disney is giving children this dire warning against this, and whether you think it's good or you think it's too much for children, you think it's just right, whatever you think, it's definitely Disney's approving this. This is a Disney movie.
Sure.
And yet at the same time, there's a Princess franchise, and the faces of the Princess franchise are these earlier films, are these earlier Cinderella and then Sleeping Beauty, Princess Aurora from Sleeping Beauty. So at the same time Disney's critiquing their old model, they won't let go of their old model. If you get the DVD for Frozen, the very first preview is a remastered edition for Sleeping Beauty.
So you get yet again more mixed messages about love and girls.
Exactly, lots of mixed messages, and I think this is an important thing.
Well, and actually, Connie Shimo is going to be talking more about that. She's giving a talk at SUNY Plattsburgh on Thursday about this directly, about love and Disney and the Princess franchise. Fascinating stuff, Dr. Connie Shimo. Thank you so much for telling us about it.
Thank you for having me.